What happened when the marsupial applied for a mortgage? He didn't qualify.
If you just read the bio for Dr. Steve, host of Weird Medicine on Sirius XM 103 and made popular by two really comedy shows, Opie and Anthony and Ron and Fez, you would have thought that this guy was a bit of, a clown.
Why can't you give me the respect that I'm entitled to?
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent to Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
From the world-famous Cardiff Electric Network studios, it's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, Dr. Scott, the traditional Chinese medical practitioner who gives me street cred, the wacko alternative medicine assholes. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
And back from sabbatical, we have P.A. Lydia. Hello, P.A. Lydia.
Hello.
So glad to have you back. And back from double secret sabbatical, we have Sensei Joyner. Hello, Sensei.
Hello, guys.
This is a show for people who never listened to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you have a question, you're embarrassed to take your regular medical provider. If you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347-POOHIT. Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine or at DrScottWM. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcasts, medical stuff, and whatever. Things you can buy. Just don't worry about it. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything you hear with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, practical nurse, physician assistant, pharmacist, respiratory therapist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever. Don't forget to check out stuff.drsteve.com. That's stuff.drsteve.com for all of your Amazon needs. Just go there. You can click straight through, or you can bookmark it, or you can scroll down and see all the different things that we have talked about on the show, including the Navage, the greatest invention in the world for people with nasal congestion. So check out the Navage. We're going to get a Navage machine, and we're going to make nurse practitioner Mel B do one, one application here in the studio, and then laugh at her. But we won't be laughing as hard as we would if we made her do a neti pot. You look stupid. Google image neti pot and look at how stupid those people look. You don't, exactly. Sensei Joyner's got it. It's you don't look that stupid when you're doing the Navage. As a matter of fact, you look cool. So stuff.drsteve.com. Check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. If there's something that you want that isn't there, email him and he'll figure something out.
Yes.
No, he'll take care of you. He does that. And please don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/weirdmedicine. It's mostly just Tacey and me, plus old classic stuff that you can't get anywhere, some photographs that you'll never see anywhere else, stuff like that. It's really fun. And we have some relatively inexpensive tiers. And we're just having a lot of fun over there. So if we get up to 1,000 subs, Tacey can quit her job. And if we get up to 100, we're not quite there yet, we will do a live stream just for the Patreon people, do live questions and answers and stuff like that. So it's going to be fun. So we only started it a few weeks ago, so I'm not upset that we're at 70-some subs. But we would like to get it up there, and I think it's a little bit more loose and more, fun isn't the right word, but it's just more loose. It's less structured. Anyway, check all that stuff out. You guys got anything to plug? You want to plug your dojo or anything? Cobra Kai?
We're not that famous.
Okay. You may not want to. It's okay. If you think about it, if you want to during the show, we will. You have anything, Dr. Scott?
No, I think we may have a new sinus spray coming up soon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll let you know as soon as we get it. Yeah, we're working on putting some CBD in with our nasal spray.
Oh, now that sounds interesting.
Yeah, CBD oil in with the nasal spray. I'll keep posted. Hopefully by next week.
Okay.
We'll be able to put it on the website.
Okay. You might actually get some traffic there.
Let's hope so.
All right. Well, welcome back, everyone. Good to see you, Sensei.
Likewise.
If you were taught kung fu, do you know what we would call you?
Sifu.
Sifu. That's right. Okay. Very good. We're going to see. I guess he ought to know that. Hang on. Oop.
Give yourself a bill.
All right. That's all I got on that. I've been watching Cobra Kai. That's how I know a thing or
motion
two.
Motion detected at the front door.
Okay. Thank you, Echo. Echo, tell us a joke.
Did you hear about the meteor shower over the nudist colony?
No, I didn't.
It could be seen with the naked eye.
Oh. Never worse.
I have to give her an applause on that one. That wasn't the worst. Some of her jokes are really boo-worthy. Anyway.
I love it.
All right. Very good. Well, P.A. Lydia.
Yes.
You are drinking gin.
Well, I was, but I have since stopped.
Since what?
I'm
what
ready to be professional.
Oh, don't.
Don't start now.
No, that's the wrong.
I was having a little gin. Yeah.
This is the wrong place.
My face is a little bit warm.
Good.
Okay, good. Because DJ Mel B last show slammed half of a bottle of of tequila. And my really expensive tequila, and which is fine.
Ooh.
And her mom called during the show, and I said, oh, your daughter's over here slamming shots of tequila. And she said, well, that's no surprise. Yeah. So I guess
it was. We can't bring her in too often. I don't think the budget supports it, does it?
Sirius XM doesn't pay me enough.
Oh, my gosh.
It really wasn't that expensive.
No, I
stuff.
Know. I'm just being stupid.
I found.
But she's averaging about a half a bottle per show.
Yeah. So. I found that. Did you know that you can ship hard spirits through the mail? I mean, you can mail order spirits now?
I've heard, but I haven't done it. But I've heard.
So I was looking. A friend of mine for Christmas got a bottle of this bourbon called E.H. Lawrence. It's like hand, small batch stuff. And it's such a small batch that they have to put the proof on
right.
there, the required, and they have to write it in by hand because it's different every time. And I took one sip of this, and it about blew the top of my head off in a good way. So I've been looking for it everywhere. And it's just gone. And you go to the liquor stores. Well, we get it about once a year. We don't put names on the list. I said, I don't care if it's a year from now. I want it. And they couldn't find it. So my dyad partner was in. So in our thing, we have a medical person and then an administrator. And we're right. dyad partners. And he was in Gatlinburg, and he went to a liquor store there, and they had a bottle of it there. And he said, you want me to buy it? I'm like, hell yeah, I want you to buy it. It was $700.
Oh,
and I
man.
Said, no, thank you. It was good, but it wasn't that good. So, they're just waiting for some rich person to come through there that doesn't give a shit about money to buy it. So I went online just to see if I could find anything. It's everywhere. And so I found a website, and this isn't it's a plug for them, but I don't get anything returned, called Boozy, which is a great website name.
That is a good name.
And they had it, and I ordered it, and it should be here tomorrow. So
and not for $700,
no,
I'm sure.
Not even close.
Jeez, how funny.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so I had no idea you could do that. I was sure that when they got to the point where it said, oh, you're from Tennessee, never mind. But that didn't happen. So I'm very excited. No idea you could buy hard liquor. So I'm going to be stocking up on some rare stuff. Anyway.
Cool.
I do want to thank Sharon O'Connell from a company called Flax of Life. Ooh, I might have to give her one of those for that. Flax of Life. Apparently they do flax products, but it's flaxoflife.etsy.com, and she sent these aromatherapy neck and eye massage things, and they're amazing. And P.A. Lydia, I've got one for you downstairs.
Oh, thank you.
Why did she get something?
Thank you, Miss O'Connor.
Well, because...
How about me?
Well, I'm going to
suffer through this.
Okay, I hear what you're saying, and I know it's 2022, and we're not supposed to be thinking in binary terms anymore, but it just seems weird for me to give you an aromatherapy neck massage thing.
I agree.
You can borrow it if you want.
All right, I'll just use Lydia's.
It just seems weird. I'm old school. I'm a boomer. All right, what am I going to do about it?
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you. So anyway, all right. You guys have some news stories, and PA Lydia, everyone is very excited about your return because you always bring interesting stories and people really like you on the show. And we're working on trying to get PA Lydia to be, if not a regular, a semi-regular. And so what did you bring for us today?
I'm down. Yeah. So I have a couple of stories that have been in my head the past couple of times that I've come and haven't been able to share them. You always say,
We'll do like Howard Stern. We're going to clear out the computer.
Okay. Well, they'll go well together. I always ask you, as you know, like, what can I prep? And you just say weird and gross.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, the two best stories that I have, both are a bit sexual. Number one might be
well,
some
never
good.
Mind then.
Yeah, right. My mom won't be calling into this show because she doesn't know how. I don't tell her. So the first will have some good STD awareness. So back when I worked in urgent care, I was treating this lady for chlamydia.
Okay.
And treated her. I'm like, did you talk to your husband about this? Because I would treat their whole family.
Okay, now you're getting real close to some HIPAA stuff here. Why don't we say you heard about this from now on?
Yeah. I heard about it back. It was several years ago in another state.
But okay.
Anyway, this lady would come in, and I said, you know, you got to talk to your husband. We got to treat. No, my husband, he knows I got it from a toilet seat. Like, okay, well, we know that that's not true. But anyway,
right.
Treated, taken care of, both parties. Several weeks later, she comes back. Like, a few weeks later, I'm like, what the heck? You know, again, we learned this lesson. She says, no, I swear I haven't been with this other person again. My husband was treated. Anyway, she had failed to wash her sex toy.
Wow.
And had re-inoculated herself.
That's interesting. With chlamydia?
Really?
It can
quickly
live that
after.
Long?
I don't remember the exact time span, but it was close enough. Unless
she just kept using it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Or unless she was lying to me as well.
Fomite transmission. Chlamydia. Let's look that up.
Let's look and see. I could have been fooled. I could have been duped all this time.
Fomite, such as a non-porous plastic surface, may serve as a potential vector for the transmission of chlamydia infection to the eye, especially under humid conditions. This new information may prove useful in counseling patients and their sexual partners. So, yeah, chlamydia, this is from, it's a PubMed article from the journal Cornea, but this would apply to any mucous membrane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just says chlamydial conjunctivitis disease associated with venereal transmission through direct sexual contact. It says the study explored the potential role of a fomite. So if people don't know, a fomite is an intermediary object that would be inanimate. So and when I say intermediary, I cough on a table. And then COVID sits on the table in my glob of mucus. You stick your finger in it and then stick your finger in your mouth. That would be fomite transmission because it's not direct from me to you. It's direct from me to the table and then from the table to you. All right. So we determined in vitro recovery of chlamydia trachomatis. Okay, so in vitro just means in the test tube, non-living. Non-porous plastic surface under ambient and human conditions using the standard shell vial technique. I don't know what that is. And confirmation by direct monoclonal immunofluorescence. So they did a very sensitive and specific test. And it said under ambient conditions, the TP50, and that's in other words, the time at which 50% of the samples were positive was 5 minutes with complete desiccation. In other words, desiccation meaning drying out, occurring at 45 minutes. So unless she was just
be unlikely.
Pounding that thing every five
I fell
minutes.
For it.
Yeah, I think you fell for that
Okay.
one.
You can boo me.
I think you, how about...
You get nothing! You lose! Good day, sir!
Good day. Okay, the next one is a little bit funnier.
Okay. So, no, that was hilarious.
That was a good one.
Well,
you were
my naivete. So the next, I have a friend who's a PA that's a pathology assistant.
Okay.
And so... Yeah, I went to her lab one time because I work in oncology, and she would dissect lung tumors routinely, and I just wanted to see how this was done and see them in person, right? So I go into the pathology lab, and I don't know if you have ever been into a pathology department.
Yes, of course.
But it's
yeah.
a nice, dark...
I thought about doing pathology at one point.
Dungeon of a place.
And I'm glad now that I didn't, because my eyes are so bad I can't really see through a microscope very well anymore. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah.
Not enough about me.
So they have some trophies from different surgeries and things that they just keep up in the lab.
Yes.
And in this large 5-gallon bucket was a very large like cucumber that was just really partially messed up, just eviscerated.
Okay.
Like half of it, like ground, and it was in a bucket of preservative.
Okay.
I'm like, I asked my friend, like, what is this? What's the deal? So, person had inserted it into the rectum, well, through the anus.
Yeah.
Quite large.
Well, where else would they get it?
We're talking like
except
at
through the
least
anus,
5-inch diameter.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the big farm ones.
Yeah. Ooh,
anyway, thought better of it and inserted a drill.
Oh, to try to pull it
to
back
try
out.
To pull it back out, put the drill in reverse, but unfortunately perforated their
oh
colon.
Oh my God! Oh my
wrong
God!
Check,
answer.
Please.
Wrong answer.
I am too smart. I am too smart.
Goodness gracious!
Yeah. So I don't know what happened to the poor soul.
Well,
but
people will
they
do anything to not go to the emergency room when they've shoved a 5-inch cucumber up their ass.
Yeah.
But just listen. We've talked about this before. If you go to the emergency room, we have all agreed on this common fiction. I sat on it. Right.
Got home.
And, yep. and no one will blink. No one will go, oh, yeah, sure you did. No, they can just go, okay, well, let's get it out.
Exactly. Better to go and get help
yeah.
than to drill.
And the problem is with things like cucumbers is what people don't understand. If you've ever done a suppository, you shove it up there, and then all of a sudden the suppository goes bloop, and it pulls away from your finger. That's because of that sort of internal sphincter. You know, the top part of the sphincter muscle is round. It's sort of like a donut.
Right.
And when you get it up there, the force on it will force something up into the rectum. Mm-hmm. And now you can't pull it back out again. Now, if you do that with a cucumber, there's no way you're going to be able to grab the cucumber to pull it back out again, or light bulb or Coke bottle or any other stupid thing.
Honey, get the DeWalt.
Now, there are, yeah, really, the DeWalt.
How about the shop vac next time?
Oh, that might actually work.
That might work.
Be better than a drill.
Hey, honey, get the Vaseline and the shop vac.
Except, please, don't do that.
No, please do not.
Because if you do that, and I said, do I can do. If you do try that, you're likely to prolapse your rectum.
Right.
And that's you're not going to just
not great either.
You're not just going to be yanking the cucumber out. You're going to be yanking your intestine out. Right. With
people,
it.
It's an exit.
Yeah, which is not any better than a perforated bowel.
That's
by
right.
The way.
Right.
It's
right. Right.
Equally awful.
So now, if you want to do some ass play, there are toys that are made for this, and you'll notice that they are tapered on the front end, and then they get bigger, and then they get tapered down again. But then at the very end, they've got a stop. You know, a wide
right.
Rim.
Yeah, a rim, thank you, that keeps it from going bloop and getting stuck up there.
Mm-hmm.
So just spend the $5 and get a butt plug or a vibrating ass thing or whatever you want to get. I'm no
ass whistle.
Butt whistle. I was thinking about.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, there you go.
Well, and you know what? Is there a Flatus flute up there? I don't see one. Oh, wait.
One.
I do see one behind the camera, but it's okay.
Yeah.
The Flatus Flute at flatusflute.com. We have nothing to do with Flatus Flute, but it's got my picture on it anyway.
Great picture.
It is perfectly made for ass play because it has that tapered end, gets bigger, and then it gets small again, and then it gets really big again to hold it on the outside. Is that what that is behind there?
I hate to mess with it. I'll knock over.
Okay, yeah, don't worry about it. I'll show you one later, PA Lydia. Okay.
There used to be one up there, but I think
we gave it to somebody. Yeah. Usually that's like a gift that you would get for coming here is this whistling butt plug. That's
I think Mel B. took it.
I
thought it was a medical. It's not a medical.
No, flatus flute. Yeah, it's a medical thing.
Well, you know, for kids, for babies, they have the gas. They whistle.
Really?
Yeah, they truly, like, they're designed to whistle. So if your baby's constipated, they make these insertions, and you enter them, and then the gas comes out, and it creates a whistling sound.
Yeah, so what I think what you're talking about is the suppository, the rectal rocket that's got a slit in it so that you can pass flatus through it?
Well,
it doesn't blow the suppository out.
There's no suppository, though. It's a plastic applicator, and then you remove it and throw it away.
Why would you want the kid's ass to whistle?
That's what I was going to say. Unless they just got
to know
they're
relieve passing gas. If
they get just terrible gas.
It lets you know they're passing flatus. Yeah. Okay, I got it, because they can't tell you.
Yeah.
What kind of whistle is it? Is it like a...
I hope it's like one of those, you know, those ones that go, wing, 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 wing. That would be hilarious.
No, that would be good.
It would be good.
Oh, my God.
That would be fun. I'd put that in my kid's ass every day.
Yes, he would. Yeah, and that's why they're still in therapy, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I won't tell the story about the 12 Barbie dolls in the guy's rectum, because I've told that one too many times. But I'll tell you that one later, PA Lydia. That's a good one. And when I was in training, they had a wall of fun things in the ear, nose, and throat department. It was a big glass case, and it had all this stuff that they'd taken out of people's ears and noses. And those were pretty interesting. But nothing's more fun than something that came out of somebody's ass, though.
Yeah.
You know?
I had a...
Careful.
I heard about someone who was a prisoner who would always come to appointments with guards, and the guards would always bring pictures of things that were in urethras.
Oh, yeah.
For which they previously had to carry other prisoners to the hospital for.
That's another one is...
Hell no.
Urethral sounding, it's called. So if you've ever done any nautical stuff, if you're sounding, you've got a rope with knots on it, and however many knots it goes down, you can tell how deep the water is where you are. It's called sounding. And so anything that uses a solid object to probe a depth would be called sounding. And so people will take all kinds of things and shove it in their urethra. And then when you lose that, again, same situation. There's no getting it back again. If it ends up in your bladder, that's probably the best case. If it's half in the bladder, like a paper clip, don't do that. If you do a paper clip, first thing you're going to do is you're going to abrade, if not perforate, the urethra. And then if you lose it in there, half of it will be in the penis and half of it will be in the bladder. I'm assuming a dude doing this. Yeah. And that's a problem, because now you've got all this pressure being put at where the leverage is at the very end of the paperclip that's in the penis. And then a urologist has to go in there. And Dr. Scott and I have both had fiber optics to our bladder, and it sucks.
Jeez.
And just imagine putting a fiber optic big enough in there that's got a clamp on it that can then yank something out of there. And what if it's bent? You can't straighten it out. You're just going to yank it out bent.
No, it's terrible.
All right. Well, this is, a return to an old tradition.
Return to normal.
Yep. Hang on. Tacy, you're on Weird Medicine.
Oh, are you serious?
Are you okay? Oh, no.
Hi, Tacy.
Oh, she is now back to normal.
I better stop recording and see what's wrong.
We're off to a
we'll
good
be right
start.
Back, everybody. All right, and we're back. Goodness gracious. Liked it better when Tacey was here in the studio all the time, but we're back to normal where she's calling and just doesn't remember that we record on, it doesn't matter. She doesn't have to know my damn schedule. All right. Where were we, by the way? Anybody remember
things in people's cockles?
Butt plug.
Oh, yeah. Urethras. Yeah, don't shove stuff in your urethra. Okay, next.
And don't stick anything anywhere unless you, you know, have to.
Or it was meant for that.
Yes.
Right. All right. You guys want to do some questions? Do we have any other stories? Scott, you got anything?
Nothing interesting. I got a few things you sent me, but nothing.
Okay. Wrong. Well, okay. Thank you. Let's do one of those.
Well, the one thing I do have, it was talking.
Can you talk into your microphone, though?
Well, I can, but we got a little reconfiguration here today. Let me turn this there.
Okay.
There we go. No, I was just talking about a little bit of health, testicular health.
Yes.
And actually, the article you sent me had about five different articles in it. First one being, peeing after sex, is it really necessary?
I don't like that. That causes urethral spasm for me.
Here's what experts say. For the female, it actually can be.
Oh, for the female, yes.
It can be beneficial, actually.
Well, I'm just thinking about me, of course.
Of course, of course.
Okay.
It does help lessen the chances of
urinary tract infection.
UTIs, yeah, which
that's hilarious. Why are you laughing?
Well, I was laughing because P.A. Lydia started this whole show with talk of STDs and infections, so on and so forth.
Okay.
That's how I prevent my STIs.
Well,
and clean your
and then drink it.
Yeah. And clean your toys.
And don't use it again within 45 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and Dr. Steve, I don't know if he'll remember this or not. He probably
right,
will.
Right. Okay. I just got that. I'm a little slow today.
Hey, remember we had that guy years ago that called and had a his dad had gotten an STD because he purchased a penis pump from a yard sale.
Oh, I remember that.
Yes. And hadn't cleaned it.
I
think we just disproved that today.
Also, probably lying now that we know a little bit more about this.
Now we dug a little deeper.
I got it from my penis pump. Now, what happened was he got the penis pump and then went crazy and was just boning everybody he could get his hands on. And brought home a little something extra.
A little something.
That's just, I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
I have no knowledge
you heard.
Of that. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Nothing. All right, what else you got?
Well, one other one you sent me was talking about a serious problem. It sounds like something not so serious, but what people with big boobs want you to know about their large chest and the discomfort they have.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Frankly, don't care.
Yeah, well, that's what
some
most
listeners
of,
might.
That's right. Well,
okay.
So as I was reading this, of course, I mean, we all, you know, deal with pain medicine all the time, and I was reading down through here, and I have a lot of people with back pain, and certainly they've had breast reduction surgeries. And
my wife had that mutilation surgery.
Yes. And can help, and it seems like the men are the ones.
But that was why, because she said her back hurt, and she hated going to the gym and always being that big booby girl. She didn't like that.
Well, and that's kind of
that's what I liked.
Yeah,
about
and that's the thing is I think the men enjoy it a whole lot more than most of the gals. But the gist of this
and what is that anyway? I mean, what is I don't even understand it myself.
And all we can do
now
is
they're sweat glands
and keep staring at them. That's all we do. We just
stare
licking at
them and,
for no
I know
no good reason.
But I am a big boob fan, and you don't have to be huge, but the tit-to-gut ratio is the thing that sets me off. Now, that just gets your foot in the door. If I don't respect you, then this is really true. If I had this girlfriend, and people I know, they're just going to say, whoa, you're a fruit or whatever, but she used to win the hot body contest at this place called Roper's back in the day, and it was kind of a redneck bar, and she would win these contests week after week after week, and I liked her, but I really didn't have any respect for her, not because of that, but just we just didn't, you know, intellectually we were just on completely different wavelengths.
Worlds.
Yeah, we were in different worlds, and although I think she kind of wanted to be my girlfriend, I just wasn't, I couldn't, I just couldn't get into it, you know? And so the boob thing gets you in the door, but I still have to have some respect for you.
You're so deep.
I'm not. It just, but that's just how I am. I'm hard. I don't like it.
At least he knows.
I don't like that. I wish that I could just have
fallible
gone through my life just boning everybody, but I just couldn't do it.
Hey man, you got to have standards, Dr. Steve.
Some standards.
But do you though? I don't. I wish
boob to belly ratio.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
Number one.
That's a nicer way to say what I said.
Oh my gosh.
Because I said tit to gut. But,
oh.
Yeah, well,
B squared.
T to G. Yeah.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
The BBR. I like that.
My word.
Yeah, so the boob to belly ratio. So you could be a small person, but still have that boob to belly ratio. And that's, for whatever reason, I'm hardwired that way. Now, I have a funny feeling it's because my mom was like that.
Here
you know, she had a real small waist and big boobs. Well, I think all guys kind of, that's where they sort of get their first sort of images of what the ideal woman should be, is with their mother.
Could be.
I got a real weird story.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, gosh, here we go.
So, I have a similar body type to my husband's mom.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. But anyway, he told me a story one time that he was young in his red sports car in New York City feeling himself, and he sees this wonderfully voluptuous woman walking down the street with good ratios, right? Essentially like a big butt. And he starts, like, slowing down, catcalling her. Turns out it was his mom.
No. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
That is hilarious.
And it kind of scarred him for life, but then I always kind of thought, like, yeah,
well, that's because you're an idiot.
Oh, God, that's hilarious.
That is hilarious.
Well, he's got a type.
Now he knows.
He's got a type.
Now he knows. Oh, my God.
So there, I think there is something to that with some guys. I'm not going to say every guy, but there's something to that.
How
for sure.
Funny.
That's funny.
There's two quiet guys in the room here.
Yeah, they're being awfully
care to,
quiet.
Care to comment, guys? Mom?
I'm saying shit about shit. All I will say is the further I read down this article, they've got a bunch of gals they were interviewing.
Yeah.
And some of the sizes in these gals' chests are just incredible. This one lady, she wears a friggin' it's a pea. A pea cup. That's what I said. I said,
that's what you do a urine sample in.
Yeah, I guess a 40 F and 40 N is not big enough. She can sneak into them, but a pea is ideal for her.
Dang.
That's what I said. I mean, and I'm reading down through triple D's and F's and E's and all this stuff. And then this
now, the cup size is the difference between the chest wall and the protuberance, right?
Right.
Okay. So I know that I was going to do a thing for Who Are These Podcasts, and they've got two women on there, and they were sort of competing against who had the best boobs, right? So I said, well, one measure of that would be breast volume, and there's actually a way that you can measure that without directly measuring it. There's a series of measurements that you can make. You know, like from the nipple to the chest wall on one side, and then there's some other stuff that you can do. And from that, you can estimate breast volume. So the plastic surgeons will use this just a screening tool when they're going to do either implants or reconstruction and stuff. And it turned out it was too complicated for them, and they didn't want to do it. But it was quite fascinating. And that's all. It wasn't a great. No payoff to the story, but there is a way that you can do objective measurements of breast size that is not just, you know, cup size and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but as a member of the Itty Bitty Boob Club, I have no comments on this story. I'll let you guys just handle it. You
okay, well,
to be experts,
we'll handle them all right if they'll let us.
Oh,
anything
God.
Else in that article?
No, nothing okay. at all.
All right. We're just showing Lydia how stupid
poor
we
Lydia.
Are. All right. Poor Lydia. Why?
She needs more gin.
I'm fine.
She needed more gin this morning.
All right. You want to answer some questions?
Let's see some questions.
Number one thing, don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
All right. Very good. Uh-oh.
Steve. This is Wade from Louisiana.
Hey, Wade.
And whoever else is in the studio with you.
Thank you.
But I heard you guys talking about the pig heart that was transplanted into the guy. I had listened to another podcast that talked about a sugar molecule called alpha gal.
Oh, yeah.
That all other mammals have that causes our bodies to reject their mammalian tissues. There's actually a syndrome called alpha gal allergies.
Which we talked about three or four shows back, and we had those folks on the podcast, and it's called You'll Never Go in the Woods Again. So there's something about alpha gal.
Which means you're allergic to red meat, but the developers that have developed this genetically altered pig breed that doesn't have the alpha gal sugars in it has got it approved through the FDA to sell the meat to people that
yes.
have the alpha gal allergies.
Well, that was the first thing I thought of when he said that. Mm-hmm. So alpha gal is galactose, alpha-1,3-galactose. It's a sugar molecule. And so if you get bit by certain ticks and you get activated, you can get this alpha gal allergy that makes you allergic to red meat, except, P.A. Lydia?
That meat from apes and other old world monkeys and humans.
That's I was looking for this. Damn.
Give yourself a bill!
Cannibalism.
Yep, good that's job. Actually true. So primates, certain primates, right? Old world monkeys, apes, and Homo sapiens. Yep. Don't have that, and so if you have the alpha gal allergy, you can eat bush meat, I guess, you know, or long pig. Did you know long pig is the
bush meat? Bush.
Yeah. That's what it's called. I love when you talk dirty.
Oh well, I wouldn't blink a man. Honey, I'm gonna have me some bush meat tonight.
This show's gone from bad to worse, I'm afraid.
Say that to Tosi, see how far that gets you.
I was going
to
say, yeah, we may all be in trouble later.
Well, anyway, Bush, anyway, okay. So just look up Bush meat, and you'll know what I'm talking about. But, yeah, and then long pig is the, I don't know where that came from, but that's a term for human meat.
That's a new one to me.
So if you don't keep triggering the allergy when you have alpha gal allergy, it will go away. So you have to lay off of red meat for I don't know how long. It's like a year or 2 years, something like that, and then it can resolve itself. This is pretty interesting. All right, yeah, let me see. Not all patients with alpha gal syndrome have reactions to every ingredient that it contains alpha gal. Alpha gal, but it's that sounds like a Justice Society of America character, right? The Saturn lad, an alpha gal. Most healthcare providers recommend patients with AGS stop eating mammalian meat, such as beef, pork, lamb, venison, rabbit, except for this alpha gal deficient pork, which is, that's cool as hell. The problem is alpha gal syndrome or allergy syndrome is so rare that I don't think that they're going to have this whole industry come up where you can have all this alpha gal free stuff unless it becomes like gluten. Back in the 80s, anybody that said, well, I don't eat gluten, you thought they were a weirdo, and now it's just gluten-free stuff everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, my kid has to go eat gluten-free, and he said, what am I going to eat? And it's like everything. There's everything that's out there.
There is now.
There is a gluten-free version of it.
Yep. Good stuff.
And he said, what about Cheez-Its? And it's like, yeah, okay, Auntie Annie's makes a gluten-free Cheez-It. So
I try to be gluten-free.
Yeah, I have to be mostly gluten-free. I'm gluten sensitive, so if I eat a lot of it, it really bothers me. But I could have like breading on, you know, chicken or something like that.
Same
way.
Kind of a fake gluten free.
It's not. Yeah,
part time.
Sensitive.
All right. It also does say here, although very rare, some people with severe alpha gal syndrome may react to ingredients in certain vaccines or medications. So talk to your person. So. And what do you do to prevent it? Prevent tick bites. That's the number one thing that you can do. All right. Let's see. That's very interesting that they did that. Let's see if he had anything else to say.
That was pretty cool. And that's...
Okay, yes, it is pretty cool. Thank you, Matt.
Good.
All right. Let's try this one.
Well, hello, Dr. Steve and crew.
Hello.
How is your New Year's?
Excellent. How about yours?
I hope it is well.
Thank you.
Anyways, hey, I have another stupid COVID question.
Oh, no.
So I have a cousin that works as an RN in Spokane, Washington, emergency room at a hospital. And I also have an aunt who works as a, I think she's an aide or something, but she works in emergency as well. They are both seeing more vaccinated cases than unvaccinated. And I'm wondering if I think you've mentioned before that you are in and out of the hospital as well.
Yeah.
These days. So can you?
Well, I mean, I work in the hospital, if that's what you mean.
Are you seeing the same thing at your hospital? And why? And also, by the way, they were seeing this before Omicron.
Yeah. So, yeah, breakthrough cases. The vaccine we were hoping would prevent infection. It probably does a percentage of the time. But what it really does is help prevent serious illness. So we're seeing lots of breakthrough cases in people who were vaccinated. I was doubly vaccinated, and I got it. I had a badass case, had to get the monoclonal antibodies. But here I am, you know, no long COVID, no loss of taste. You know, that's just my case. That's anecdotal. But we're seeing this over and over again. And we are seeing increase in cases. Not interested in cases anymore. I really am not interested in cases at all, because we don't track cases of viral gastroenteritis, for example. Maybe Norwalk virus, if it's on a cruise ship, we'll track those. But we want to track cases that have some impact. And what really with COVID-19 now, with Omicron particularly, is what's interesting to us is hospitalizations and deaths. And I will tell you, and I argue with this, I was on Kermit and Friends with Elisa Jordana, and there was a guy arguing with me on that. But here's 100% of Duke Health patients in the ICU or on life-saving treatment are unvaccinated. That was in December, late December, so it's not less than a month ago. That's my informal survey in our hospital is it's 100% of people who are on the ventilator have not been vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So, natural immunity is really important, and no question about that. I've got a lot of people ask about that. I think that if you've had the virus, you are in a pretty good position right now. But if you're unvaccinated and you have any risk factors at all, and even then, we see every once in a while, but it is extremely rare, we'll see someone that didn't seem to have any risk factors. They just had a genetic susceptibility to the virus. Now, that's rare. And you have to determine whether that's more rare than a catastrophic adverse effect from the vaccine. And, you know, those are hard numbers to pull together.
I was actually on the phone today with Pfizer about trying to get some information for their vaccine. As you know, I work in hematology and wanted to find out about patients with ITP, immune thrombocytopenia, who got the vaccine.
Explain what that is, because people listen.
Essentially, your immune system kills your platelets.
Yeah, and right. Your platelets do
aid in clotting.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Pretty large role in forming clots. So with low platelets, you would be at risk of bleeding.
Yeah. And those people, when they have it, if they get a storm, for whatever reason, it comes and goes. And all of a sudden, when they're having an episode, they'll start bruising. And they, you know, there a lot of kids who have it, the parents will know, because they'll start noticing bruising in places where there really wasn't any trauma. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so this particular case was actually a friend's daughter. The kid is like in the early teens and had to get the COVID vaccine to be able to go to camp, and had been quite stable with ITP, with counts around 65,000, which we would think bleeding risk would be less than 50,000, but really less
it's
than
really
20,000.
Right.
So anyway, got the COVID vaccine 2 weeks ago. Platelets are 4,000 now. And so I contacted Pfizer because we have all of these published case reports of episodes of ITP exacerbation after the COVID vaccine, which seems to be about 12% of the time. But when I contacted Pfizer and asked for all of their information, which usually when I contact them for an oncology issue, they give me like pages and pages of details. Yep. They were unable to provide much information. So really the lay people have more access to information about it. But I wanted to ask you, Dr. Steve, are you aware of any timeline on that?
Yeah, there are. Let me see. Gonna have to call him back. I know that there are studies on this, and there's one from Emergency Medicine, June of 2021, called Immune Thrombocytopenia Following COVID-19 mRNA Vaccine Causality or Casualty. Okay, I see. And, you know, the thing is what you got to determine, because a lot of these kind of adverse effects like this, for example, Guillain-Barré syndrome, that's ascending neuritis for sensei joiner. Those people will have inflammation of the nerves, right? And it will cause weakness in the feet, then the ankles, then the knees, and then the hips. And if it works its way up to the chest, it can cause weakness of the respiratory muscles, and then those people end up on the ventilator. And then it descends again later. And so that's why they call it ascending neuritis. So vaccines, in the 70s, people were getting the swine flu vaccine, and a bunch of people got Guillain-Barré syndrome. Well, guess what else caused Guillain-Barré syndrome that year? Influenza. So it's the body's response to that immune trigger that causes the Guillain-Barré syndrome. Yes, the vaccine caused it, but so did the virus. So it's the molecule itself. So I would be very interested in knowing, and I wonder if you've heard anything, P.A. Lydia, whether or what the incidence is of kids or adults getting exacerbations of their ITP when they get COVID-19. And have you heard anything on that?
Yeah, no, I meant to look that up, that exact number. I only know anecdotally, it's high enough that we always schedule routine blood draws very frequently after they get the vaccine. And it's always a discussion.
Well, that's the vaccine, but I'm just talking about the illness itself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not sure of the rate, but, you know, they would, just by virtue of having an autoimmune condition, be at higher risk of having an adverse event to COVID-19 infection. So I always err on the side of vaccination, but this was a difficult
if they're at risk from that, but they're also at risk from the virus at the same rate, let's just say it's the same rate, then the vaccine makes sense, because there's other things that can happen to them with the virus that won't happen with the vaccine. Sure. Now if the risk is much higher with the virus, then again it makes sense to do the vaccine, because then you're winning on both accounts. Right. You've got less ITP and you've got less adverse events from the virus. But if it's flip-flopped, then now you got to weigh that sort of risk versus benefit thing. You know, what's the risk that they're going to progress to severe illness? Now, PA Lydia's patients at the cancer center, they're at high risk anyway. Speaking of high risk, have you all given anybody Evusheld over there yet?
Not yet. I think we've had one patient get it.
We should talk about what it is.
We just went live with it this week. So you might actually be wiser on that front. I had the package insert open at work yesterday.
Okay.
And I was just trying to figure out, because it's post-exposure prophylaxis.
No, it's pre-exposure.
Pre-exposure, okay. So pre-exposure prophylaxis. So what is the difference in that than getting the vaccine?
Right. Okay. So there are some people can't get the vaccine, or there are some people who, because of anaphylaxis or whatever, there are some people that even if they got the vaccine, they're not expected to mount a powerful immune response. That'd be people like HIV patients with a low CD4 count, people who have just had stem cell transplant, something like that. So you give them the Evusheld, which is just basically monoclonal antibodies that have been approved for pre-exposure prophylaxis. And what it does is it gives them about 4 months of protection from infection. they won't get infected if they've got this because they've just got a buttload of neutralizing antibodies in their bloodstream. So it's pretty cool stuff.
Oh, that is cool.
That is cool.
And is it an every 4 month administration?
I don't know that yet. I mean, it just came out, so I know they give it to you. And I don't know what you might look up. What the frequency is
on
that.
Yeah, I'm looking at that now.
Here we go. The incidence of thrombocytopenia, low platelet count, in patients with COVID-19 has been variable across studies. Mild has been observed in up to one-third of those patients, but an even higher rate in patients with severe disease compared with non-severe disease. So 57% compared to 31%. So, yeah, it's associated with the infection of the virus, too, which makes sense. That was our hypothesis. And now it's been borne out in the literature. That was from something, Comprehensive Clinical Medicine 2020, medical journal, international medical journal. So anyway, all right?
Cool.
What else we got? All right. Let's try this one. Uh-oh.
Hello.
Hello. How are you today?
I have a question for Dr. Steve.
Okay. Oh. Quite anonymous.
Excellent.
Or you're a robot.
Dr. Steve?
Yes, sir.
Does this look infected? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes. Definitely.
Yes, it is.
Looks must like. Must be removed.
Pussy.
Looks like syphilis. Sir.
Yes, must be removed.
That's our friend Cardiff Electric. Check out his podcast. It's the most surreal and odd podcast that's ever been on the internet today. And we broadcast out of his, you know, network studios, too. So there you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cardiff Electric podcast. This is crazier than shit. He's one of my favorite people in the world. All right. Let's see here.
Hey, Dr. Steve. Hello. Everybody, actually, hello. But Dr. Okay. Steve, this one's mainly for you.
Thank you.
I have a quick question for you. So after listening to this week's podcast, you guys are talking about, you know, organ donors and stuff along that line.
Yes.
I actually have a friend of mine that did receive an organ transplant.
Okay.
And is doing very well.
Good.
But it got me to thinking, she was on a list for quite some time waiting for, you know, the transplant. My question to you is, if a person is on a waiting list for, let's say, a liver or kidney or whatever, and they don't see that day, and they expire before they're able to get their transplant.
Yeah, which happens all the time, unfortunately.
Are they able to qualify as a donor moving forward? In other words, like let's say their lungs are okay, or their left arm, or whatever. Are they able, even though they're on a list to receive and they expired, are they able to use any harvest parts out of them?
Sure. It depends, but whether their organs qualify, you have to be brain dead. And so let's talk a little bit about brain death. Back in the day, when you stopped breathing, you were dead. Then the medical profession and scientists and engineers, invented respirators or ventilators.
Right.
So now just stopping breathing can't be the definition of death. Then they said, well, when your heart stops, then you're dead. Well, now we have ACLS, we've got pacemakers, we've got stuff that, you know, we can jumpstart somebody's heart sometimes. So that alone can't be the only definition for death. So now we define it as cessation of brain function. But how do you determine that? There are a series of things. We could do a whole talk about that sometime. How do you determine if someone is brain dead? But one of the definitive methods to confirm brain death is lack of blood flow to the brain. Okay. Now, if you have someone that's brain dead and they're still on the ventilator, their heart's still pumping, we can still get oxygen from the outside to the inside, but they are deceased. Those people can donate their organs. So if you had someone that was on the list for a liver because of a non-infectious reason, it couldn't be for hepatitis, But for non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, or they had a chemical hepatitis, and all of those effects were gone, but only their liver remained, and then they were brain dead. I don't see any reason why they at least couldn't be screened by the state donor services to see if they could donate a heart. They certainly could donate skin and corneas. They could donate heart and lungs, kidneys, whatever, if the other things were still working. That would be an odd thing, but it would not be impossible. But if they had some infectious disease, then that would knock them out of it. So I understand, before we go, you've got a question from the waiting room, Dr. Scott.
That's correct. It's for PA Lydia.
Would
you consider giving prophylactic treatment to a patient who has multiple myeloma? He hasn't vaccinated and boosted.
Okay, sorry, I interrupted you.
God damn it. Have we waited 20 minutes for me to ask that question?
Oh, go fuck yourself.
Okay. I've been so excited about this question.
I know. How far have we been working on Praxin, and we get interrupted by...
Prophylactic treatment. What?
So Evershield.
Oh, okay. So, okay, go ahead. So she's asking, would you give Evershield the pre-exposure prophylaxis, and what is the patient population she wants to give it to?
Myeloma. Multiple myeloma who has been vaccinated and boosted. Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Excellent question.
Yeah. So I guess we should quickly say what multiple myeloma is.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for the question. So multiple myeloma is a disorder in which you get enough mutations in one of your plasma cells in your bone marrow, and your plasma cells are supposed to produce immune globulins. Right, but one of these plasma cells goes defunct, gets enough mutations, becomes immortal, makes more and more of itself, crowds your marrow, and you do not produce appropriate immune globulins. Very exciting. Yeah.
It is.
So by that virtue, you're quite immunosuppressed, and that's the number one cause of morbidity and mortality in myeloma patients, is actually dying from infection. Mm. And so for Evershield, myeloma patients are in the category one of people who should get it.
That's right.
So in the highest risk of people.
Regardless of vaccination status.
That is, yes, because we would think that perhaps they would not mount an appropriate immune response because their plasma cells largely are not functioning appropriately. So
pre-exposure prophylaxis is not a substitute for vaccination, but... can be used in people who have had a vaccine if they are in that risk group. And it says on their website that Evershield should be administered at least 2 weeks after vaccination. So that would be the only caveat there.
Yeah.
So that's an excellent question.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good.
So short answer, yes.
Yeah. Yes, Kim. Thank you.
Oh, Kim, she's a good.
She's a good.
All right. Here we go.
Hey, Dr. Steve, Jim from Massachusetts calling once again.
Hey, man.
Hey, I just finished listening to this week's episode, and it finally dawned on me that you're thanking about 30 people at the end of the show.
That's true.
A few of which I would say most of us know, but I got to say, most of them, I have no idea who you're talking about and why they have these nicknames.
Right.
Any chance maybe sometime you could run through it and just explain who all these people are?
No.
I realize that'd probably take up a whole episode, so maybe you could do a little at a time.
It certainly would. Hey,
take care, Steve.
Hey, thanks, Matt. No, that's the problem. Okay, so we're going to do the end credits now and the shout-outs and stuff. And we can't forget Rob Sprantz. Now, Rob... he's right. There's too many. I'm just gonna do a few of these.
No, don't do it. Don't fall pressure. Don't.
No, I mean it's like 30 people. Don't count them. Sensei Joyner, count up how many people we're thanking at the end of the show now. Okay, and when I do them. So Rob Sprantz and Bob Kelly were the people who approached us to put the podcast on the original Riotcast Network. We've now been sold and went to the laugh button, where our listenership went down by 2/3, but that's fine. totally fine.
Okay.
Greg Hughes, everyone knows him. That's Opie. Opie greenlit our show. Anthony Cumia came to the very first show and told P.A. John and me that it was the best first show he'd ever heard. Of course, we never... In 17 years or whatever, 14 years we've been doing this, 15, can I just list some other year numbers, random numbers. We haven't gotten any better, but it was the best first show he'd ever heard. And then Jim Norton, Travis Teft, that Gould girl. It's just too many of them. Okay, so are
That's
you ready?
Six.
You ready
That's
to count?
Already.
Okay,
we'll
start at the
six,
beginning.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teft, that Gould girl, Louis Johnson, Paul Opcharsky, Chowdy 1008, Eric Nagel, the Port Charlotte Whore, the Saratoga Skank, the Florida Floozy, Roland Campos, sister of Chris, Sam Roberts, she who owns pigs and snakes. That's an interesting story. I'll tell you that one someday. Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Matt Kleinschmidt, Dale Dudley, Holly from the Gulf, Christopher Walken's double, Steve Tucci, the great Rob Bartlett, Vic's Nether Fluids, Cardiff Electric, Casey's Wet T-Shirt, producer Chris, Carl's Deviated Septum, the inimitable Vincent Paulino, everybody. Eric Zane, Bernie and Sid, Martha from Arkansas's daughter, Ron Bennington, and of course, our dear departed friends, Fez Watley and GVAC, who will never be forgotten.
37.
37?
37.
Jesus.
Well,
there you go.
Okay. That's more friends than I actually have. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern on demand, and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules, podcasts, and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. You don't have to say anything.
Thank
That's fine.
You.
Okay. All right.
Bye.
Thank you, PA
Bye.
Lydia.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Okay.